I'm very happy to have back a guest that I've had on many times. His name is Rick Newman. He's a columnist for Yahoo Finance, and he's always insightful, provocative, and takes on many of the biggest stories of our time. Always love to have him on the show. Hey, Rick, welcome back.
I always enjoy being on. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So before we get started, I mentioned that you're with Yahoo Finance. What is Yahoo doing in these times when everybody is quarantined in their home? I know I'm talking to you in your home. I'm recording this in mine. And I know that Yahoo does video pretty much all day. What are they doing?
Well, we're based in the East Village in Manhattan. That's where our headquarters are. We have beautiful TV studios there. They're brand new. And nobody's there right now. Mm-hmm. We are all working from home. And we have managed to broadcast 8 hours a day live, and sometimes a little bit more than that, through Google Hangouts, which is, you know, kind of a video conferencing service that Google offers. So we have engineers who are working the magic to get all the slides up on the screen and transition from one guest to another guest. But we're all just looking at each other on Google Hangouts, looking into webcams.
Yeah.
And it amazingly, it works. We've had some flubs and some technical difficulties, but we think the audience gets it and they don't care. And we're kind of just powering on.
So Google Hangouts is like a Zoom. Everybody's knows
yes.
about Zoom.
Similar to Zoom.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
I contacted you because I wanted to discuss a couple of articles that you've written recently. And one is entitled, "Ignore Those Horrific Sounding Economic Numbers That We Read About All the Time." And you start with saying the terror began with Goldman Sachs predicting a 24% decline in the second quarter GDP. Take us through that.
Well, I've read enough economic history that I was thinking back. I mean, the Great Depression in the 1930s is our benchmark for about as bad as the economy can get in modern times. And I was thinking to myself, hold on a minute. I don't think GDP fell by as much as 24% during the Great Depression, as bad as it was back then. So I went back and looked. The worst decline in GDP occurred in 1932, where it shrank by 14% for the entire year. So I went and said, what are they talking about? 24% decline. Morgan Stanley's was even worse. They're saying 30% decline in second quarter GDP. So here's the nuts and bolts of that. They are talking about the change in GDP from the first quarter to the second quarter on an annualized basis.
Oh, yeah.
And it's that annualized basis that is screwing things up here. So there are reasons. I mean, you know, in normal times, there are reasons to annualize a quarterly figure because it tells you what pace you're on if this were to be the rate of change over an entire year. But in this instance, economists do not think that the change in GDP from the first quarter to the second quarter is going to go on for an entire year. So when they're talking about a 24% drop in second quarter GDP on an annualized basis, that's saying if it happened every quarter like that for four yeah. quarters in a row, that's how bad it would be. And
yeah.
I know economists think it's going to be that bad. So just to wrap this up, how bad is the whole economy likely to do this year? So I called Moody's Analytics forecasting firm. They think GDP for the year 2020 compared with 2019 will fall by about 5%. That's bad.
That's
actually
bad.
Terrible.
Yeah.
But it's not as bad as 25%. So, you know, just how to understand these numbers everybody's talking about.
Well, you know, these numbers can be skewed in the investment world too. So, for example, you can look at your return and you could be up 10% for the quarter. That does not mean mm-hmm. that you're going to be up 40% for the year. And on the reverse, if the market, let's say in the first quarter of this year, was down 25%, we're not going to say that the market's down 100% for the entire year. So it doesn't make any sense whatsoever when talking about returns to annualize. But you mentioned that in some cases, annualizing does make sense. And you use an example of monthly car sales. Tell us about that.
Right. Yeah. So I do cover the car industry. And this is the language everybody uses. So what was the pace of car sales in February? The pace of sales was 16.6 million vehicles. Now, what everybody forgets to say is that dealers did not sell 16.6 million vehicles in February, mm-hmm. but that was the seasonally adjusted annualized rate, or SAAR, S-A-A-R. And that's the shorthand everybody uses. And that tells you how sales are doing this year compared with last year. So in 2019, now this is the actual number for the year, automakers sold 17.1 million vehicles. So that's the real number. And then you annualize that on a monthly basis to see how you compare. So if the car sales in February were 16.6 million at an annualized basis, the pace of sales slowed a little bit from the total of 17.1 million in 2019. That's when it's useful to annualize. But to my mind, it's not helpful when you're going through dramatic changes and the, you know, your reference point is completely out of whack, which it is right now.
It seems to me that Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and those others should have reported those numbers differently, in my view.
Well, they're talking to each other. I mean, this is, you know, this is Wall Street research for Wall Street analysts. Mm. But, you know, reporters, you know, like us at Yahoo Finance, we see a lot of this research and we report it. And we've actually had discussions internally at Yahoo Finance. Let's make sure we provide the context on stuff like this, because, I mean, you should panic. If you think real GDP is going to fall by 24%, I mean, you should panic.
You should panic, yeah.
But it's not. It's not that bad.
Okay, so even a 4% or a 5% decline in real GDP is incredibly painful. And we're seeing that a lot of employers are laying off workers more and more. Question then comes to actually your second article I want to discuss, which is you write, we may have lost 21 years of job growth. Take us through some of those numbers.
So we know that some of the employment numbers we are getting are, they're just out of date because like the government's major employment survey, for instance, it doesn't come out until 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks after they do the survey. It's literally a survey. So normally that's helpful because the economy is not changing as dramatically as it is now. It's not real helpful right now. So I'm looking at what some of the forecasting firms think is actually going on right now in the month of April with regard to employment. And the economists think we could have lost well over 20 million jobs.
Wow.
You know, this is all the restaurant workers that we've been hearing about, you know, the people who are not lucky enough to be in a salaried job, such as mine, where you might be able to work from home. I mean, these are people who, once the cash flow stops, they're just out of work. So Oxford Economics thinks 24 million. They think that's how many people are out of work right now. And that's just in the month of April. So it could get worse. If you actually take those 24 million away from the employed labor force in the United States, that puts us back to the same employment level as in 1999. So that means we would have lost 21 years of job growth in 2 months. That is astonishing.
Our economy is nothing like what it was in 1999. It doesn't even seem possible in terms of the job mix, but also in terms of the size of the economy and the size of the population and all of that.
It really doesn't seem possible. I mean, you know, just for comparison, during the recession in 2007 to 2009, we lost a lot of jobs then, and that only added up to 11 years of job growth.
Yeah.
So it went back to about the same time. I mean, we always get the jobs back. I mean,
yes,
every single time in history, and there have been terrible depressions in, you know, U.S. economic history. We always get the jobs back. Mm-hmm. But this just gives you some idea of the scale of what's going on. And it's not showing up yet in the official numbers. You know, the official unemployment rate, I think, is only 4.4% now. It's going to go, it's going to skyrocket above 10%. And by the way, 10% is the highest it got during the 2009 recession.
The degree or the depth of this problem has to do with the timing of the virus and the ability for us to get the virus under control and for us to get back out again. What is your best guess? What is your scenario for us getting back on our feet? What are the first signs that you would expect to see of the economy starting to heal?
Congress, I think, did a good job with that giant stimulus plan. I think that was much better than some of the bailouts back in 2008 and 2009. But you know what the ultimate stimulus plan is here? It's not an economic plan. It's a public health plan. And I'm just following the epidemiologists on this. And basically, they say we need massive widespread testing before we have a vaccine. I mean, we know we're not going to, we cannot speed a vaccine as much as we would like. So that's going to take probably a year or more. Before we get to that point, we need massive testing And then we also need these antibody tests. So testing, first of all, if everybody can get a test and everybody can get repeated tests,
yeah,
you can check once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I'm just making this up, but in order to go to your job, you need to get the coronavirus test, let's say once a week. And yeah, you need to know within a half hour that you're healthy and yes, you can go to work, or you're not healthy and you need to stay home. I mean, what's happening right now, because we have not had enough availability, a real shortage of these tests, is, you know, it's basically governors at this point they are just assuming everybody has it. That's why everybody has to stay home, because they're assuming everybody has it, because they have no way of telling.
Mm-hmm.
So that widespread testing is really the thing that is going to allow us to go back to work and start reopening restaurants and movie theaters and things like that. And for everybody who's interested in this, the best authority on this is Scott Gottlieb. He was the FDA administrator from 2017 to 2019. He has written a terrific Pathway to Recovery study that's at the American Enterprise Institute. I like to tell people, go find it. It's at aei.org. And I think he's got the best thinking out there in terms of how we get out of this.
That's beautiful. You know, that's exactly why I like to have Rick Newman on the phone with us. Rick, take care of yourself. Be safe. You're located where?
I'm in Westchester County, just north of New York City.
So kind of the epicenter, not in the city, but Westchester, wasn't that one of the first counties earmarked?
Yeah, we had one of the first outbreaks a couple of miles from me. And we're dodging the virus every day, man.
Yeah, we are too. Very good. Stay safe, and thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on, Steve. Always enjoy it.